Jaya Kunja Bihari.
Krishna Pristaya Bhutale, Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve, Gauravani Pracharine, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatya Deshatarine. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Garadara, Shri Vasadi, Gaurabhaktivinoda. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Udirayat. Nashta Praeshu Abhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. For reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, unto Narayan Rishi, the Supermost Human, unto Mother Saraswati, the Goddess of Learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. A regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is destroyed almost to nil. And loving devotional service unto the Supreme Person, is who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. Thank you for allowing me to speak on the Bhagavatam today, requesting the blessings of the Vaishnavas, and especially the senior Vaishnavas who may be listening. Please bless me that I can say something just slightly helpful today to bring us closer to Krishna. So today we are in Canto 1, Chapter 13. Title of the chapter is Dhritarashtra Quits Home, and the shloka is 49. Soyam Adya Maharaja.
Soyam Adya Maharaja.
Bhagavan Bhuta Bhavanaha. Kalarupa Vatirna Syam. Abhavaya Suradvisham.
Abhavaya Suradvisham.
Soyam Adya Maharaja.
Soyam Adya Maharaja.
Bhagavan Bhuta Bhavanaha. Kalarupa Vatirna Syam. Abhavaya Suradvisham. Soyam Adya Maharaja. Bhagavan Bhuta Bhavanaha. Kalarupo Vatirna Syam. Abhavaya Suradvisham. Soyam Adya Maharaja. Bhagavan Bhuta Bhavanaha. Kalarupo Vatirna Syam. Abhavaya Suradvisham.
Soyam Adya
Maharaja.
Bhagavan Bhuta Bhavanaha.
Kalarupo Vatirna Syam. Abhavaya Suradvisham.
Soyam Adya Maharaja.
Bhagavan Bhuta Bhavanaha. Kalarupo Vatirna Syam. Abhavaya Suradvisham. Soyam Adya Maharaja. Bhagavan Bhuta Bhavanaha. Kalarupo Vatirna Syam. Abhavaya Suradvisham. synonyms. Please repeat along if you would like. Sa, the Supreme Lord. I am the Lord Sri Krishna, Adya, at present. Maharaj, O King, Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead. Uta Bhavana, the creator of the father of everything created. Kala Rupa, in the disguise of all-devouring time. Avartina, descended, Asyam, upon the world, Abhavaya, for eliminating, Suradvisham, those who are against the will of the Lord. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. That Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, in the guise of all-devouring time, Kala Rupa, has now descended to the earth to eliminate the envious from the world. Please respond. That Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, in the guise of all-devouring time, Kala Rupa, has now descended to the earth to eliminate the envious from the world. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. There are two classes of human beings, namely the envious and the obedient. Since the Supreme Lord is one and the father of all living beings, the envious living beings are also his sons, but they are known as the asuras. But the living beings who are obedient to the Supreme Father are called devatas, or demigods, because they are not contaminated by the material conception of life. Not only are the asuras envious of the Lord and even denying the existence of the Lord, but they are also envious of all other living beings. The predominance of asuras in the world is occasionally rectified by the Lord when he eliminates them from the world and establishes a rule of devatas like the Pandavas. His designation as Kala in disguise is significant. He is not at all dangerous, but he is the transcendental form of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. For the devotees, his factual form is disclosed, and for the non-devotees, he appears like Kala Rupa, which is a causal form. This causal form of the Lord is not at all pleasing to the asuras, and therefore they think of the Lord as formless in order to feel secure that they will not be vanquished by the Lord. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gananjana Shrakaya Chakshri Umilitamina Tasmini Shri Guruvimaha Ancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namonamaha. So here Prabhupada is saying in this purport that there are two classes of human beings, and we've heard that many times, and sometimes he describes the asuras and devatas in different ways. But here he is saying that the devatas can be considered obedient to the will of the Lord and to the rules of the Lord, and that the asuras is somebody who is not obedient to the will of the Lord or the rules of the Lord. In the, I believe it's the 15th chapter in the Bhagavad Gita, the divine and demoniac natures, Prabhupada also states that the divine are those who follow Vedic injunctions, and the asuras are those who do not follow the Vedic injunctions. So something similar is being said here. The Lord is not at all dangerous, but he is the transcendental form of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. For the devotees, his factual form is disclosed, and for the non-devotees, he appears like Kala Rupa, or the all-devouring time, which is a causal form. So for the devotees, the Lord is not dangerous. They are in his internal potency, owing to their surrender and their purification from material existence. So they come under his internal potency. In Mother Nanda's class, it was a nice purport where Prabhupada calls it subordinate cooperative service. Subordinate cooperative service is the ideal constitutional position of the jiva, which of course means surrender. And cooperating with the will of the Lord. For the non-devotees who have no conception of that, for them, the Lord comes as Kala Rupa, or all-devouring time. Right? It's called in Sanskrit is a word for it, Kalasarpa. It's the snake of time, and the snake devours. What does the snake devour? All the atheistic plan making of the non-devotees. All their plans are eventually devoured by the snake of time. A few verses ago, we heard that the only remedy for the Kalasarpa is bhakti yoga. Well, just a little bit more about surrender. We've been discussing it in a few of the previous classes. Surrender to the Lord versus acting from our own material inclinations, our own modes, our own particular set of modes that we are born with. And we heard recently that the material body is under the control of kala, karma, and guna. So sometimes it can seem that it is difficult to overcome this conditioning or to surrender. It may seem difficult. However, in a recent class, Tamohar Prabhu and Sukada Prabhu were saying how they had a nice exchange about how this surrender is actually a great mystery, because it seems, although it seems like sort of not desirable or not pleasing to surrender to the will of somebody else, when we surrender to the will of the Lord, it's actually, we become happy through that surrender. So it's a little bit of a mystery, or it may seem like a, may seem at odds, but it's actually produces our happiness when we surrender. From the third chapter of the Gita. Two persons, one in Krishna consciousness and the other in material consciousness, working on the same level, may appear to be working on the same platform, but there is a wide gulf of difference in their respective positions. The person in material consciousness is convinced by false ego that he is the doer of everything. He does not know that the mechanism of the body is produced by material nature, which works under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. He does not know that this gross and subtle body is the creation of material nature under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as such, his bodily and mental activities should be engaged in the service of Krishna and Krishna consciousness. On the other hand, one who is in knowledge of the Absolute Truth, he well knows the difference between work in devotion and work for fruitive results. One who is in knowledge of the Absolute Truth, he well knows the difference between work in devotion and work for fruitive results. That's Bhagavad Gita 3:28. The knower of the Absolute Truth is convinced of his awkward position in material association. He knows that he is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and that his position should not be in the material creation. He knows his real identity as part and parcel of the Supreme, who is eternal bliss and knowledge, and he realizes that somehow or other he is entrapped in the material conception of life. In his pure state of existence, he is meant to dovetail his activities in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. He therefore engages himself in the activities of Krishna consciousness and becomes naturally unattached to the activities of the material senses, which are all circumstantial and temporary. So that's a nice point here. By engaging in devotional service, we naturally become unattached to material activities. So it doesn't have to be a separate endeavor. He knows that his material condition of life is under the supreme control of the Lord. Consequently, he is not disturbed by all kinds of material reactions, which he considers to be the mercy of the Lord. As we also know, through this surrender, this is the only way to get rid of the clutches of Maya, right? The method is surrender, because we cannot do it through our own means or through our own endeavor. The Lord does it of his own accord, out of paternal affection for the jiva. So the surrender is the only way to get out of the clutches of Maya. Bhagavad Gita 7:14, we can say it together if you would like. Daivihi asha guna mayi mama maya duratyaya mameva ye prapadyante mayametam tarantite This divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes, is very difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered onto me can easily cross beyond it. And that is how we cross over our modes, our material modes, and our conditioning through surrender. And Prabhupada elaborates a little bit on that. Although the living entities are part of his energies and are therefore divine, due to contact with material energy, their original superior power is covered. Right? So through lifetimes of contact with different material modes, their original superior power is covered. Being thus covered by material energy, one cannot possibly overcome its influence. His release from the clutches of material nature is very difficult, even though that material nature is an inferior energy, because material energy is ultimately conducted by the Supreme Will, which is the living entity cannot overcome. Right? So both the material nature and the divine nature, both the internal and external potencies, they're both controlled by Krishna. The conditioned soul is tightly tied by the ropes of illusion. A man bound by the hands and feet cannot free himself. He must be helped by a person who is unbound. Because the bound cannot help the bound, the rescuer must be liberated. Therefore, only Lord Krishna, or the spiritual master, can release the conditioned soul. Devotional service or Krishna consciousness can help one gain such release. And here's a nice point that Krishna does this release from the material energy out of paternal affection for the jiva who is endeavoring in devotional service. So out of his paternal affection, Krishna releases, he orders the insurmountable modes, the material energy, to release the jiva. And so it's a personal process. Therefore, surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord is the only means to get free from the clutches of the stringent material nature. So only through surrender and the concomitant purification can we overcome our conditioning and the modes of material nature. Now, what does it mean to surrender? Would anybody like to say, what does it mean to surrender? Like we say that all the time, but what does it actually mean? Would anybody like to share anything? Yes. Yes, what is surrender?
Following your spiritual.
Yes. Yes, and that is one aspect of surrender. Thank you. Following the orders of the spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada said. Prabhupada offers, there's a few definitions of surrender, but one definition Prabhupada offers is it means engaging in devotional service. Right? So it's not just I throw my hands up in the air and I surrender, but it's also engaging in that purification process through devotional service. Although I have to say that surrender, it does, if one just throws their hands up in the air, I'm talking about non-devotees, and they just pray to follow Krishna's will, I know I do believe that Krishna does also, reciprocate with that, but as devotees, we also purifying our material existence, we're purifying our subtle body. Right? So surrender also means sadhana for devotees. I know, for example, in a 12-step program, a big part of, and Radhana Maharaj was saying how the 12-step program is very similar to Krishna consciousness. So how is it similar? Because they also believe that by surrendering to God's will is how they get healthy from their addictive tendencies, is through surrendering and trying to follow God's will instead of trying to compulsively follow their diseased will or consciousness. So it's very interesting. And they get healthy through that process of surrendering to the Lord, right? Even though they're not engaging in devotional service. But you can see that, Krishna works on different levels with different types of people. And there's that prayer that I believe it's in... like Alcoholics Anonymous and other like 12-step programs about, you know, please God, please help me to let me do your will and not my own will. So the surrender is very powerful on a few different levels. But for us, we also want to purify our existence, and therefore for us, surrender means sadhana, to engage in devotional service. I'll just give an example of that idea, that concept from history, just very quick. Just that I thought it was a nice simile, a nice allegory. If you don't mind, sometimes I throw in these like historical things. So at the turn of the century, there was from the 19th century to the 20th century, not our last turn of the century, so 120 years ago, there was a very brilliant physics couple. They were at the University of Paris, Pierre and Marie Curie. So they were very brilliant physicists. And we can understand like how brilliant they were, and especially at that time, women were not really permitted to study at university. And Marie Curie, she's actually from Poland. She got accepted into the University of Paris, which, you know, women did not go to higher education at that time, but because of her brilliance, she was accepted. She was like the only female in that whole physics class at the University of Paris, the Sorbonne. And she ended up being like number one in that class. So you can understand that she was, you know, very brilliant, and her husband was also in that class, Pierre and Marie Curie. So they ended up winning the Nobel Prize for their discoveries in radioactivity, in radiology. And they were specifically credited with founding a new element in the periodic table of elements. They discovered radium. So they won the Nobel Prize for that. So I thought this was like a nice allegory of surrender. So although they were very brilliant, both of them, in order for them to like discover that radium, it was a huge endeavor. It took like 4 years and just like nonstop work, and they had like a ton of like material, like literally one ton, like literally, not an exaggeration, of material. And from that material, they had to like distill it down through the days and the weeks and the months. And it took 4 years to distill this like ton of material to like isolate like 1/10 of a gram of radium. So this was their endeavor. Can somebody take the children? Thank you. So although they were brilliant, right, so that's the idea of surrender, they were brilliant, but it took them 4 years to actually, you know, really hard work to actually discover radium and to win the Nobel Prize. So that's our endeavor in Krishna consciousness. So that's my little simile for today. Right, so there's the surrender, but then there's the endeavor. You know, we can have the ideal, yes, Krishna, I have to surrender. Okay, I understand that. But then we also have to endeavor in Krishna consciousness. So that idea of surrender is not enough for the devotees. Then those who are not willing to surrender and purify, Prabhupada calls them here asuras. And for them, the program is Kala Rupa and the laws of karma and the wheel of samsara. And they get knocked about by those. And in the seventh chapter of the Gita, Prabhupada calls them miscreants, duṣkṛtanās. And why are they miscreants? Because they do not cooperate with the will of the Lord. They do not surrender. And Prabhupada defines duṣkṛtanās as atheistic plan makers. And what happens to all their atheistic plans? They are eaten by the snake of time. And Prabhupada breaks them down into four different types of atheistic plan makers: the mudhas, the naradhamas, the maya pahritagyans, and the asuram bhava ashritahas. And these asuras are thoroughly ensconced in the concept of time. Right? They're very much into time. They very much operate by time or kala rupa. And for the most part, their idea of life is how to retire comfortably. That is sort of the ultimate goal of life. How can I retire nicely, retire comfortably? In the 16th chapter of the Gita, the Damanya person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine today, and it will increase in the future more and more. Right? So everything's about now and the future and wealth. They believe that to gratify the senses is the prime necessity of human civilization. Thus, until the end of life, their anxiety is immeasurable. Devotees, on the other hand, they use time to deepen their devotional service. Would anybody like to share how devotees use time to deepen their devotional service? Any ideas? Thank you. One way is to hear Srimad Bhagavatam class. That's how we utilize our time. Anyone else? I was thinking, yes. Sure, company.
I was thinking that we use time because sometimes I'm on the internet preaching.
Can somebody give him the mic?
12. Mm-hmm. Right.
Sometimes he overuses time because he's on the internet preaching to people until midnight or 1 a.m. I'm sure Krishna is pleased by that.
This morning I probably went to bed around 1:30.
What's that?
I said went to bed around 1:30, almost 2 o'clock.
Yeah, and then how are you going to get up for, you know, for the morning program?
Well, at least I made it.
Well, I'm sure that Krishna is pleased with that use of time anyway. I was thinking, for example, comparing our progress in spiritual life, you know, we can say, look how far I've come over the past, you know, whatever, 5 years or 2 years. Look where I was then and look where I am now. It's like one use of time that the devotees can use, right? Or for example, setting aside the morning time, the Brahma Muhurta, for chanting our rounds, right? It's another use of time. And devotees understand that time should not be wasted. Right? The human body is rarely achieved. And although temporary, it is meaningful because one can execute devotional service, teachings of Prahlad Maharaj. Another aspect of time for devotees is the idea of patience. Tariyat, patience. Upadeshamrita, Nectar of Instruction, number 3, there are 6 principles favorable to the execution of pure devotional service. And one is being enthusiastic, utsahat. Another one is endeavoring with confidence, nishchayat. And the third one is dharyat, patience. Right, so those are 3 of the 6 principles favorable for the execution of devotional service: being enthusiastic, endeavoring with confidence, and being patient. I'm sure we can all relate to patience and how important it is to cultivate patience, and also can seem challenging sometimes because Krishna has his own time frame, which we cannot understand. We should try to align ourselves with Krishna's time. There's a very nice aphorism that I heard some years ago about patience and God, and I really appreciate it, and I really think about it all the time, and it makes a lot of sense. Sometimes God comes late, but he's always on time. Sometimes God comes late, but he's always on time. Did somebody want to elaborate on that? How do you take that? Madhumati?
Well, he's late according to our time.
Yes.
But he's on time according to his time.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And he's always on time. Like, always. He's not... It's not a mistake. God is always on time. Yeah, thank you. He's putting some suspense. He wants to see your endeavor. Yeah, exactly. Say a little bit about that.
At the last moment, then He saved her.
Yes, and he wants us to deepen our faith in him through that waiting, right? And through that seemingly long time, he wants us, he's testing us, you know, and he wants us to deepen our resolve and deepen our devotional service. And also sometimes he wants us to become somebody, right? Through that time, like he wants to mold us into somebody. So his time is always perfect. Prabhupada says one should not be impatient in Krishna consciousness. Indeed, this Krishna consciousness movement was started single-handedly, and in the beginning there was no response. But because we continued to execute our devotional activities with patience, people gradually began to understand the importance of this movement, and now they are eagerly participating. One should not be impatient in discharging devotional service, but should take instructions from the spiritual master and execute them with patience, depending on the mercy of Guru and Krishna. And sometimes also when you distribute a book to somebody, or you are cultivating a relationship with a newcomer and give them literature, right, there's an element of patience, right? It's like, okay, don't you see that this is it? This is like, you know, the highest truth, and this is like the goal of life, don't you see? But sometimes, because of their material coverings, they don't see right away, right? So what to do? Just give them the book. We offer our friendship, and we wait for Krishna's time, right? Divyanga Prabhu? Did you want to say anything about that? Wait for the mic.
Yes. We enthusiastically, patiently proceed on our mission, knowing that every jiva is at a different level, and some of them, like we call them, ripe fruits, and some of them are just not ripe yet. But so many times we give a book to somebody, and they take it, and they don't like it, but they give it to somebody else. And I've had so many people like that, like my friend Jiva Goswami Das. His friend got a book in the mall. They gave him a Bhagavad Gita, and he gave a donation, but he just didn't want it. So, but he went to throw the book away, and then Jiva said, no, don't throw it away, I'll take it. So he took that book home, and then the next day, he went to the temple. And then the day after that, he was out selling books. So
wow.
That's what happens. Somebody gets a book.
Wow.
That's why we should all try to share this nectar that Prabhupada has given us with anybody that will take it.
We shouldn't just put our material ideas on it.
Yeah, we can't. You can't really do it if you restrict yourself like that. You have to remember that this is spiritual energy, and that Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God, wants it done more than anything else.
Thank you.
His children are lost. Imagine if your children were lost and you had a chance to get your children back. So how important it is, for especially the devotees that already have it, to share it with anybody they get near.
Thank you.
Because we tend to take it for granted, you know, but the truth is, people that don't have it, they're really suffering for it. They need to be reminded. So
thank you.
That's our job.
Thank you. It's really nice. And then just one last point, and then we can have some more discussion if you would like. So Prabhupada says, in the purports, the predominance of asuras in the world is occasionally rectified by the Lord when he eliminates them from the world and establishes a rule of devatas like the Pandavas. And this is a really important concept. It's sort of like all pervasive. And we have to keep it in mind, like this is why the whole like battle of Kurukshetra even happened. And it's a very, very important concept. And of course, Bhagavad Gita 4.8, Paritranaya Sadhunam, Vinashaya Chadushkritam, Dharma Samsta Panartaya Sambhavami Yuge Yuge. And Prabhupada says, for the devotees, he appears in a nice form to teach and to enlighten. And then for the demons who don't surrender, he comes as all-devouring Kalarupa at time to eliminate the envious from the world. This is a quote from Hiranyananda Goswami about avatar. For the devotees, Krishna comes as an avatar. All spiritual paths begin with the assumption that the world as ordinarily perceived is not the highest truth. That makes sense? Spiritual paths lead upward, and avatar is one who crosses down to teach that path. He brings guidance, strength, light, and restoration. Avatar opens a channel between our world and higher planes. Avatar can be either Krishna himself or his empowered devotee. So that's the form he comes in for devotees. And for the demons, he comes to as all-devouring time. From Bhagavad Gita 11, just one last point, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Time, I am the great destroyer of the worlds, and I have come here to destroy all people. With the exception of you, the Pandavas, all the soldiers here on both sides will be slain." Eventually, the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and everyone else are devoured like a meal by the Supreme. This form of the Supreme Lord is the all-devouring giant, and here Krishna presents himself in that form as all-devouring time. Except for a few Pandavas, everyone who was present on the battlefield would be devoured by him. Arjuna was not in favor of the fight, and he thought it was better not to fight, then there would be no frustration. In reply, the Lord is saying that even if he did not fight, every one of them would be destroyed, for that was his plan. If Arjuna stopped fighting, they would die in another way. Death could not be checked, even if he did not fight. In fact, they were already dead. Time is destruction, and all manifestations are to be vanquished by the desire of the Supreme Lord. That is the law of nature. Okay. Would anybody like to add something? Or elaborate on some concept? Yes.
You mentioned about Madame Curie, how she, her and her husband, such great scientists, and how in 4 years they reduced the 1 ton into nothing, so to speak.
You're very much listening, thank you.
they did that for, it wasn't like their sadhana that they were doing, so to speak. It wasn't like a 9-to-5 job. For somebody to do what they did, they were like completely absorbed.
Yeah,
it's something, a driving force
nice,
there, yeah?
Nice point, yeah. It wasn't like, oh, I have to go reduce the...
I have to do...
Yeah.
I guess that's what I, as devotees,
that's nice
what
point.
We want.
That's really nice.
As a surrender. Mm-hmm. So I would like to hear, how is that we can go beyond the sense of duty, but actually be absorbed? And I guess when we get absorbed, that's when we can much more accomplish. Maybe you could say something
about
that?
That's a really, really nice point. I feel sort of satisfied that I bring these examples because something, a comment like that comes out of it, so.
I always enjoy your examples.
I was wondering, like, should I or shouldn't I? But I guess, thank you, I appreciate that. how do we have that single-minded absorption and devotion, and it's not like a rote, like, oh, I have to get up and go to the temple. It's like, I have to get up and go to the temple. I guess it comes down to taste, you know, and also having some experiences in Krishna consciousness that are very deep, and that, you know, we feel the presence of Krishna, you know, and we actually feel that love developing through that, you know. So it's like, I want to get up and I want to experience that. I want to experience Krishna's presence in my life. I'm just speaking for myself, so maybe somebody else can offer. I want to experience the presence of Krishna in my life. I want to be in the internal potency, because I know that the external potency is just, you know, it's just like empty and miserable. So I want to be in Krishna's internal potency. And that's my idea. Would anybody else like to share? How do we become absorbed? And not just perform our, you know, 9-to-5 routine in Krishna consciousness. How do we have that utsaha, that enthusiasm? And anybody else?
Follow people that are enthusiastic.
Well, that's a nice point. Follow people that are enthusiastic. Yeah, really nice.
So let's start to put some heart into what we're doing.
We're inspired by their Sangha. Seek out that Sangha where we can also be inspired. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
But I think that Maharaji has a question, but I had wanted to say something about time. So should I go Guru Prasad or you want to answer? Okay.
Okay, and then we'll go to her.
So time, Kala Rupa, it acts in such a subtle way that it puts the whole world in illusion in one sense. You know. There's a saying, time wears away everything unnoticed.
Nice.
Time wears away everything unnoticed. And then the example is given, just like an unbaked pot placed in water disappears imperceptibly or melts away without noticing it. You know?
Nice.
So that is how time is. And even like we had so many great civilization and everything, like the Pandavas had all those great palaces and things. But everything actually melts away with time.
Yeah.
Now archaeologists can barely find anything.
And literally it melts away.
So time, then there's another saying about time. As the wheel of time turns, so mortal revolves.
So as what is the last part? So
mortals, mean humans.
Mortals.
As the wheel of time turns, so humans revolve. This is from one of the Puran. It says, one time they move into the heavenly planets, one time they move into the hellish planets, one time they are on the earthly planets, held strongly by the noose of karma. Held strongly by the noose of karma. Karma, you know, except for the devotee.
Thank you. I was thinking, as you were saying that, Madhumati Prabhu, so there's another idea of inspiration about, you know, how do we become absorbed in Krishna consciousness? Because time wears away everything, you know, and if we're in that potency, like, that's where it's going. It's just going to, you know, melt everything away. You know? Well, thank you. That's a nice point. Yes.
First, I want to share a little experience.
Okay.
Yesterday I was out on Sankirtan, and it was pouring so heavily. So this security guard called me in and said, sit here. And I said, you sure it's okay? And he said, yes, come in and sit. So I was sitting, and right next to me was this guy sitting, another security guard, and he was autistic. He was, you know, slow. So he kept looking at me, and I said, Krishna is trying to tell me something here. So I turned to him, and I said, can you say Hare Krishna? And his face was real sour, and he go, Hare. I said, Krishna. He go, Krishna. I said, Hare. He go, Hare. I said, Krishna. I said, Krishna. And by the time I finished the Mahamantra, he had a big, huge smile.
Wow.
I mean, I was so moved. It touched my heart so much. So then he said, what's your name? And so I said, you know, we are vegetarians. We don't hurt anything. He said, really? And he kept asking. It's a little child talking. And then he said, most amazing thing. He said, what does this thing mean you just said to me? Because I'm so happy. And I thought, Krishna, direct potency, because his heart is pure. He was able to imbibe it. And he said, this is so nice.
Wow.
What does it mean? And I said, it brings all good fortune to you. And of course, the rain stopped, and I'm thinking, I wish I had a mantra card to go. I didn't have a book either. And then I was thinking, always, Krishna is always there to inspire our faith in ourselves and others. So whenever you preach, it's not preaching to the other person, it's for you too. You know, I really had such a strong realization, you know, and I was thinking, Krishna, please, thank you so much. And I realized that everyone benefits. So I was in this building, it was raining, and I said it to him, and I turned and everybody was listening.
Wow.
And you know, even the people didn't, you know, turn to me when I was saying it. When I finished, they all had a smile. And I was thinking, even in the most, not such a good situation, you can always say something to preach.
Thank you.
So when I was there, when I was leaving, he just said, like, stay. And I thought, God, I should have got some books, you know. I'm so sorry. I always carry them.
That's
I didn't
like
expect.
What Divyanga Prabhu was saying, it's like the internal potency.
Yes. You know, at that time, I just didn't couldn't make it to the car, but I was just saying, Krishna is so, he's so incredible, he's God. I just was so moved by that.
Thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm.
The other thing I want to ask you, the 12 steps that you say for the alcoholic or drug addict.
It's for any kind of addiction, they have 12 steps.
Mm-hmm. Unless you have knowledge, how can you surrender? Because you have to have some knowledge who God is. Even as devotees, like we just can't say if you're dressing the deity,
that's a nice point for devotees. In those programs, they sort of give you liberty to decide what God is for you. You know, so whatever you see God as, to surrender to that is their idea. But yeah, for us it's more specific.
So they don't have a specific
idea? No, it's like whatever you...
So when they say surrender to the will of God, like if you're an alcoholic, what does that mean to them? Like if they don't have, they have the...
It means conscience. Like prayer for will, and they have even like a specific prayer for that. Please let me discern your will. And let me not, I don't know the details of it, but...
Because I was saying, if you pray something like, please let me follow your will, they must...
It was like, you know, the serenity prayer, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. That's like a huge prayer there, so...
It's like a general thing.
It's a general thing, yeah, so like... Help me to change the thing. You know, it's about like not trying to change something that you cannot change and letting God take over in your life. Like calling upon the power of God to, you know, change your life. So it's a step towards devotion.
Because a couple of days ago, you know, one person was walking by and I tried to preach to him and he said, can I pray for you? And then I realized he was a preacher. And I said, sure, go ahead. And after he preached, and I said, so, who is God? And he looked at me shocked. I said, what do you mean? And I said, well, what does God look like? You're praying to God. Who is God? And he looked at me and said, people don't ask that type of question. And I said, well, I know what God looks like, and I know who is God, but thank you for the prayer. And then...
out there in the world, it's very general, right? We don't live in a Vedic civilization. Everyone's like, you know, doing yagyas to Narayan or anything. Like, everyone has their own ideas. And it's like, it's okay, whatever your idea of God is, that's okay. You know, so I guess that is a beginning of the path of devotion, you know. You know, whether you're a specific religion or you have no religion and you see God in nature, you know, or you see God as energy. That's pretty much the idea out there. Like, I have my own conception of God, you know.
Well, I find more, lots and lots of people are turning to God now, you know, they're really grateful and stuff. And I always ask them, so who is God? And they always say, what do you mean? And a good chance to preach, you know, or give them a book. Because they said, oh, who is God? God is Jesus Christ? And
whatever their ideas are. But yeah, that's a nice point.
It's an exciting time to preach out there. People are really turning to God, but they don't know who God is. You know, you just have to say, so who's God? Who do you pray to? And then they said, Jesus Christ. I said, you mean you're praying? You're not sure.
Well, I think, Mother Dandakesh, and she doesn't like me bringing up her name, she was telling me once how she was talking to a nun, right? A nun, and Dandakesh Prabhu, like, showed her, they were talking about, like, who is God, and Dandakesh Prabhu showed her, like, a picture of Krishna. You know, and she was just like relishing that picture, like, you know, so everyone's at a different point, but she took the opportunity to just like show her a picture of Krishna, and this like nun was relishing that. Sorry to bring up your name. And she was just saying how beautiful is Krishna, and she was appreciating his beauty. Yeah, thank you.
Anybody who
Yeah, even if they see the picture, right, and they appreciate it, it's, there's something there. Thank you. Anyone else? Yes.
You were talking about surrender, how that can take one out of the material world. And then you talked about the Curies and their physicist. And so I was thinking that a significant number of physicists say that there is no free will. They say that it's like an equation, I guess, that it's going to happen, you know. And so I was wondering, in light of our idea that surrender gets one out of the material world, how would we address the apparently philosophical debate on free will?
You mean like to a scientist, or?
Yeah. There's, you know, to the ones that say there's no free will, how would we address that?
How would we address somebody who says there's no free will?
And there are a significant number of...
Well, there's limited free will, too, right? We're like on a tether. So we have free will to a certain extent based on our relationship with Krishna. Based on our, whether it's karma or Krishna, we have free will to a certain degree. So, Prangavinda Prabhu, would you like to address that question?
On the free will?
Yeah.
What's that mean?
Well, what the Prabhu was saying, how would we explain our idea of free will? Was that your question?
I mean, we believe in free will, right?
What is free will?
We believe in limited free will, yeah. Mm-hmm.
ability
to make a choice.
Ability or
who is denying? Who doesn't have it?
I'm saying that a significant number of physicists say there's no free will.
Who is allowing them to even speak? How they make a choice to speak? Well, so that's why they don't understand what it is. They may be physicists, they may be PhD, whatever, but they don't have a conception what is the definition of free choice means.
Well, I'm saying that the answer is actually in what is being discussed.
Yeah, please share, give him the mic. Mm-hmm.
I'm saying that the answer is in what was being discussed, that surrender to the Absolute, surrender to Krishna, can take one out of this apparent finite, you know, mechanical set world. Making any sense?
Yeah, where we don't come under the mechanical laws. Don't come under those laws, so
mm-hmm.
we come
like
into like different
set.
Different set of laws.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We come under a different set of laws.
Or I would even go so far as to say the laws that we, you know, call the laws of nature or human constructs. I don't know.
Yeah, human constructs versus Krishna's constructs. Right?
Yeah, Krishna's like unlimited. There's like really no, it's completely open.
Yeah, thank you. According to the desires of our heart, Krishna can...
And they see the world in a box, you know.
Yeah, and it says Krishna destroys all their ideas and all their plans, right? Krishna, over time, yeah. So we do have free will. Right.
Well, it's not exactly black and white.
It's not black and white, thank you, yeah.
18th chapter of text 14, Krishna speaks about this. Adhisthana tathakarta karanam cha pithaka vidam vividesya pithaka chesta daivam iti panchamam There's a five factors you have to consider, always. So for an example, today will be rainy day. And I want to have fun outside. But do I have any choice about the rain or no rain? No, I don't have a choice on that. Mm-hmm. But how I will react on it, how I will enjoy in the tent, and that is not up to the rain. Mm. So we do have, at the same time, the five factors has to be considered. That I have a free will in that sense, or free choice in that sense, that how I will take the ride in the rain, how I will, I can have a wonderful time inside the car with the people I'm riding with. That has nothing to do with the rain, nature. Mm-hmm. Is nature controlling me? Yes and no. Mm-hmm. Nature is controlling by the rain, maybe obstacle in my drive. But nature is not controlling how I am having a wonderful time with my family or friends.
That's a good analogy. Uh-huh.
So we have to go like that.
And what are the five factors?
You have a Bhagavad Gita right there. No? 18.14?
18.14?
Yes. And Krishna says even two sloka later, he said, if somebody don't consider these five factors, they are not intelligent. That scared me because I felt like humiliated. Adhisthana tatha karta. Adhisthana tatha karta means this body. First is this body, made by nature.
Okay, 18.14. The place of action, the body, yeah. The performer, various senses, the many different kinds of endeavor, and ultimately the super soul. These are the five factors of action. So, place of body, place of action, the body, the performer, the various senses, the many different kinds of endeavor, and ultimately super soul, five factors of action.
For an example, like a mundane example, I give like, if I make a wooden, let's say a log into a beautiful doll or a deity. Now, I take a chisel, I take a hammer, and I use my hand. Individually, the chisel can claim, well, I'm the one who chipped off, made it into doll. But it's not correct because without hammer, the chisel would not move or chip off. Then the hand can claim, hammer, you have no value if I was not holding you.
Yeah.
Then the person who desired is probably the root cause. So you have to consider all. The person who desires, the hand, the hammer, the chisel, so all the five and the doll, all five together
yes.
Came mm-hmm. out like this.
Thank you. Thank you. Should I just read a little bit from this purport? Or is there any other questions? The soul within the body is acting to bring about the results of the activity, and is therefore known as the doer. So the soul is the doer, karta. That the soul is the knower and the doer is stated in the Shruti. The instruments of action are the senses, and by the senses the soul acts in various ways. For each and every action there is a different endeavor, but all one's activities depend on the will of the super soul who is seated within the heart as a friend. So all one's activities depend on super soul. The Supreme Lord is the super cause. Under these circumstances, he who is acting in Krishna consciousness under the direction of the super soul, situated within the heart, is naturally not bound by any activity. Those in complete Krishna consciousness are not ultimately responsible for their actions. Everything is dependent on the supreme will or super soul, the supreme personality of Godhead. So it seems like one can act under the direction of super soul, or one can just act under the direction of one's modes, and those will have a reaction. But if one acts in the direction of super soul, then that will not have a reaction.
Okay? Yeah. In the beginning you were mentioning about the internal provinces, external provinces. Those are very nice people. That first of all we have to understand who we are. The soul does not have an existence by its own right.
The soul does not have its own right to exist. There's no such thing soul can exist by its own right.
We have to accept that. Because energy does not exist by its own right. So then, we are product of our own decision in a sense that we have a choice. And Prabhupada writes that, he gives that sloka, Anisha Jiva Rupena. Anisha Jiva Rupena. The jivas are always under internal potency or external potency. It's not we are our own potency. And then Krishna controls that all his potency, but he does not control us directly. He controls us through his another potency, who we choose to act under.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, the decision, choice we make, who we should be under, whether internal potency or external potency.
Mm. Nice.
That choice is with us. Krishna will never take it. Krishna never intervene that free will. And he that's why the process is a little difficult. So that's why I was actually enjoying also
difficult. What do you mean by it's a little difficult?
No, I was saying that I was also enjoying the discussion the devotee has. It's very nice because I talk too much sometimes but I don't hear. I like also the very nice points that the devotee has, you have. So by always I think of surrender immediately triggers me. Surrender means, the definition says, Saranga saranagati haive jahar tahar prarthana sunesi Nanda Kumar. Nanda Kumar Krishna hears that person who has committed the six folds of surrender. And out of six, two are functional, four are internal. Two are functional, that a soul surrender means always thinking, what can I do to bring pleasure to Prabhupada and Krishna? If that thought is not there, he is not surrender soul.
Hmm.
Just because Prabhupada initiated me or I got blessed by a pure devotee and I don't do anything, I'm not thinking how to please them, that's not sign of surrender.
Thank you.
Okay, initiation is there, I'm not denying anything. Prabhupada accepted.
Trying to please Krishna.
That consciousness has to be there because we are conscious beings.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the other side of that, what am I going to do today that I'm not going to do today, like speculate, concoct or commit offense or allow prajalpa or offense, I have to also stop. Krishna is not going to stop for me. It is each of us has to constantly think of this positive and negative. What am I doing right now that will bring pleasure? Even I'm speaking, I'm thinking also, okay, Bhaktivinoda Thakur will be happy that he wanted us to discuss this, so I'm discussing and you all are also sharing and contributing. So this pleases Guru Parampara. Even we are speaking and hearing, we should be aware, is it pleasing to Guru Krishna? Then it is surrender. Otherwise there is no actually surrender. According to Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Sanatana Goswami.
Yeah, because Prabhupada says surrender means to engage in devotional service, and however that can be looked at on a deeper, on different levels, right? So, okay, I'm engaging in devotional service, but what is my consciousness?
Yes.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, in answer to your question, you're saying, how can you tell these other people who don't believe in free will, right? So one example, you can give many examples actually, like one is, you have a choice right now, proof, you can either stay in the class or you can leave the class. See, at every second you have a choice of what to do. I mean, minute independent, not absolute. You have a choice right now. You can tell them whatever they say. You can say, you have a choice right now, whatever you want. You know, limited, of course. You can see what, you can try it. Send them to me.
To
me. It means they're not intelligent enough to understand. less intelligent.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're like steeped in ignorance.
Read this Bhagavad Gita, then
it's really difficult to preach to those types of people, right? They're maya pahitagyan.
So then you give them Bhagavad Gita and say, the answer's here, try it out. This is for intelligent people, this book. And you'll understand.
You have arguments with this, literally, you know, just naturally talking about how it best to have sex and how you get this idea, at least you think about this idea.
I haven't found anybody that will not convince that will not convince that there's no free will.
You haven't found anyone who says there's no free will?
Right, because they don't understand the definition of free will.
You mean in your personal life, you've never read it?
Yeah. Right here, in Genesis. I met three people.
What is the physics department you have of education?
That's what I read. Well, I don't know. Right. They don't understand it. They understand what the definition is.
You're saying that there are those out there who say there's no free will.
Because they don't understand the definition of free will. It's like a God. I'm sorry.
I don't say who is God. I say what is God. First they have to give the definition, what is God? And who fits in that after? Yeah. Very good. Yes. Yes. Thank you.